Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Let me begin by saying I'm very glad to be here. This was a share which we've been trying to schedule for a few years, actually. And even when we finally got it off the ground, last week we were snowed out, so we rescheduled for this week. There were some technical complications, but we decided to go ahead with it. And as of 3 o'clock Friday afternoon, as I stood in the airport in Columbus, Ohio, witnessing the flights being canceled one by one to the East Coast, I realized this year became less and less likely. Baruch Hashem, Elokim Yina Liyadi, I caught a flight to Philadelphia where I stayed for Shabbos and was able to make it up. So I'm very glad to be in one place, in one location, certainly here in Teaneck. We read in yesterday's parsha that immediately before Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu alerts Moshe to the possible infiltration of Kohanim on top of Har Sinai. He's Artaatam, warned them. Then Al Yersu Al Hashem Liros, perhaps they will rush headlong. Sometimes there's nothing more dangerous than religious zeal. So sometimes people have to be warned to take religion in gradual stages. And Moshe turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and asks, you've already warned me and I've already alerted them. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially urges Moshe to repeat the warning, because some issues, though obvious, bear repetition. And in many cases, the more obvious, the more they have to be repeated. So I would like to see today's shiur in the same light. I have very, very little to add in terms of our appreciation of Kibbutz Avayim. Very little that is, startlingly new. But it's certainly a challenge for all of us, those of us who still have parents to fulfill the mitzvah, parents who are alive primarily. And it's certainly not an easy mitzvah, it's a challenging one. I'm reminded of the very famous comments of the Netziv in Parshas Kedoshim, as the Torah describes Kibbud Avayim, it employs the term Ish. Ish, Imo, V'Aviv, Tiro. Yesterday's Parsha mentions Kaveh, Esavicha, V'Yasimecha, but in Parshas Kedoshim, the Torah employs the word Ish. The Netziv comments that inasmuch as each individual is possessed of ego and self-definition and self-aspiration, it becomes exceedingly difficult to submit that personality, that identity, to the will of the other in general, and certainly the will of a parent who are closest to us and sometimes exert their persona and their influence in a manner which tends to stifle or limit our own. Kafka once mentioned that we have to hate our ancestors to be free of their influence. And he certainly was Mekayim that mitzvah l'mahadrin. Very difficult relationship with his father. But we certainly don't subscribe to that notion. And as we try to steer our own course towards self-identification, we certainly recognize the imperative warrant of Kibbud Avayim. And therefore, as it is such a challenging mitzvah, it is a mitzvah which bears sensitizing and repetition. One of the Amoraim in the Gemara in Kiddushin actually issued a very provocative statement. He was himself an orphan. And he mentioned, Ashrei Mishelo Chaman. Fortunate is a child who's never met his parents. This is, of course, a very strident manner to capture the difficulty of the mitzvah. We certainly feel fortunate that we did have our parents and we possess their benefit. But because of the difficulty of fulfilling the mitzvah, he employed hyperbole to describe the benefits of an individual who perhaps never faced that challenge. A challenge which ultimately perhaps invites failure. So I would like to address the mitzvah in the wake of Aseres HaDibros. It was meant to be as a prefatory shiur the week before Aseres HaDibros, but now it will occur in the aftermath of Aseres HaDibros. I'd like to begin with a very interesting and central halachic issue. Probably the most central halachic debate. To what degree must the child respect the capricious request of a parent? The Gemara in Kiddushin, source number 5, attempts to define the responsibilities of Kibbud Avayim. Tana Rabbanan, the second section, Ezehu Mara Ezehu Kibbud, how do we honor and how do we fear? So the Gemara describes Mara. And in the second line, Kibbud, Ma'achiel U'mashke, Malbish U'machase, Machnis U'motzi. I feed and I clothe, I escort and I assist. The Gemara mentions services. Delivery, provision of food, clothing, ambulatory assistance. But it doesn't mention reverence. It doesn't mention an existential reverence to the individual. Rather, the provision of assistance in need. The Torah itself avoids employing the term v'ahavta, v'yasimecha. employs a term which could be taken as a very sterile clinical description of the provision of assistance and service. If a parent were to request a child, a seemingly whimsical or capricious request which would provide no direct or normative benefit to the parent. If a parent were to ask a child to comb his hair with this part or with that part or with the following color clothing in Eretz Yisrael, I know it's always a point of contention, should the shirts be worn out of the pants or in the pants? The families have been torn asunder over the in the pants, out of the pants question. What difference does it make to a child, to a parent, excuse me? Obviously there's some psychological interest involved, or else the request wouldn't be lodged to begin with. But from a normative standpoint, it provides no concrete material benefit to a parent. So this is a machlokas rishonim, and it stems from a very interesting turn of phrase in a Tosfos in Kiddushin. Tosfos in Kiddushin, source number 6, describes a very complicated situation of prioritization. A child finds a person's walk item, the father requests that he shouldn't return it, he has a moral and halachic obligation to return the item. And Tosfos assumes that if the father requests of the child not to restore the item for totally arbitrary reasons, there's no personal interest involved, the father may want the item himself, the father just simply denies the child the right or the ability to return the item, then that is a request which need not be heeded. Tosfos writes, we'll just read the last line. The Al Tachzir Bechinam, source number 6. If a father requests the child to avoid returning the item Bechinam, for no reason, arbitrarily, Lo Itzrichkla. It is obvious that the child needn't listen. Even without any special pasuk, Gzeras HaKosuf, the child doesn't have to obey this command. Which completely, completely whimsical. Now why? So there are two interpretations of this 4-5 word phrase in Tosfos. One interpretation is that the father has essentially requested the child to violate halacha. The child has a halachic responsibility, hashev teshivein, to return an item, and by expressing his wishes against the restoration of the item, the father has essentially challenged the child to deviate from halacha. At that point, by requesting halachic disobedience, the father has rendered himself a rasha. And at least according to some, a father who achieves that status needn't be respected and no longer has that mitzvah in a relevant fashion, which we'll see later. Take a look, please, at the Meiri, source number 7. It's a Meiri in Yevamos Davab. The middle of the first line, Kamechaving, if the father simply intends that he disobey the halacha, Lo it's darachra. We don't require a pasuk to inform us of this variance. The harashahu, because the father at that stage is defined as a rasha, arguing that his son disobeyed the halacha. Vikri kan, and we apply the principle nasi biamcha, just like we must only respect a communal leader who follows and adheres to Torah will. The same conditions and criteria apply to a father as well, only if the father adheres to halacha. So according to the Meiri's rendition of Tosfos, the variance of Kibbutz Avraham here is not based on the fact that the request was capricious. The request was not just capricious, it was halachically deviant. The father actually requested a disobeying of halacha. Had the father not requested of the child to disobey halacha, let's say the father were to request a neutral wish, dress this way, comb your hair this way, speak this way, in no violation of halacha, then his wishes must be adhered to. According to the Meiri's reading of Tosfos, the only reason that a father who wishes his son not to return an Aveda doesn't need to be respected, his will doesn't need to be performed, is because it violates halacha, and he's considered a rasha. The Rashba provides a very different reading. The Rashba claims that if a father were to request from his child not to return an Aveda, independent of his status of rasha or not, the request needn't be adhered to because it provides no material benefit to the father. If I request for my child not to return someone's lost item, what tangible benefit do I receive? And in that instance, my wishes are no longer imperative. The Rashba, source number 8, Lefi she'ein ikar kvodo, the second line, Ela b'ma she'yesh lo bo hanah, Kivud Avraim applies only to an experience which provides hana. Kizaminim b'kiddushin. Kizaminim b'kiddushin. As the Gemara in Kiddushin describes, Ezeu kavod, machilo, mashkeo, malbisho, manilo. Avo amar lo lasos davar she'ein lo bo hana shel klum. The father requests a wish which provides no tangible benefit. Ein ze kavod shenitztave oleha. The kibbutz kazeh ein bo esei shel Torah. According to the Rashba, and most of the Sephardic Rishonim, only material needs have to be attended to. And the father who requests the non-restoration of a lost item is receiving no material benefit. And even if there would not be a mitzvah to return lost items, and the father's request would not be in violation of halacha, his request is no longer mandating the child. Yes?
Additional issues, does kibbutz and nira, or is this just
kibbutz? It's an interesting question. Do kibbutz and nira overlap? It's a question which is discussed in several achronim. Presumably, at this stage, neither yira would apply as well. Neither kavod or yira. Because, again, there is no material advantage delivered to the parent. Yes?
Is this talking about a son who's a gadol?
A son who's a gadol?
Yeah.
Presumably.
Not a
gadol. There's chayiv mitzvahs. Correct. Correct. Yes?
What about his initial comment as a hefshir mitzvah?
He calls it a hefshir mitzvah, but it's not the mitzvah proper.
Does he mean by that there's still some...
No, I'm sorry. He's referring to a case in Yavamos where a person has been requested to prepare food for a father, and that request may clash with Shabbos laws. So the preparation of the item is only Hashem Mitzvah, and therefore can't possibly contend with Shabbos. But at least the end point of that Hashem Mitzvah is the provision of assistance by providing, of chasing an animal, capturing an animal, slaughtering an animal, and ultimately I'll feed the animal to my father. And since there's an end point which provides benefit, so the earlier preliminary stages are considered Hashem Mitzvah. Where the end point provides absolutely no benefit for the entire system collapses because of donuts.
That's the context of the Gemara Yavamos. Yes?
Often in the area of the hospital might be that in the area, for example, he's a Rosh, according to Mary, he's a Rosh for say that he has to instruct him to do something which is to his honor, then he's calling it out there, right? Rosh will take it then.
Presumably. So this is a fascinating debate. And as I mentioned earlier, it's probably the debate that emerges most often in halacha. To what degree do we enforce a parent's will, even when it doesn't apply to the provision of benefits? There's a fascinating Tosfos in Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Aleph, source number 9, which may provide support to the Meiri's position, that honor must be showed, even if no benefit is delivered. Very interesting story. It seems a little bit harsh, and as I said before, a little bit abrasive, but it's a fascinating story nonetheless. Tosfos in Kiddushin quotes the story in the Yishalmi, of Rabbi Yishmael's mother. Now the Babli quotes Rabbi Yishmael as an exemplar of Kibbutz Avraham, who used to bend near his parents' bed as his parents would awake in the morning and assist his parents to descend from their bed perch. The Yishalmi, which tells us quote, cites a different story. The Imad Rabbi Yishmael, the mother of Rabbi Yishmael, Kol Shaita V'Shaita, Rabbi Asi Rabbi Yishmael Mebe Midrasha, as Rabbi Yishmael would return home, Haisa Rochetzes as Raglav, she would wash her child's feet, should actually drink the water out of a sign of reverence for her scholar son, for her Torah scholar child. Kishamar Rabbi Yishmael, of course, Rabbi Yishmael heard that she was drinking his dirty water. Hayimisari v'daber, he refused. A bit of an inversion here. So the mother wants to drink the child's dirty water, and the child, of course, refuses this opportunity. So the case came before the Chachamim, and she argued, she complained. So here we may have an instance where there's no normative, classic, or conventional benefit delivered. Obviously there's a psychological hang-up, but to the degree that we could refer to it as normative, I don't think anyone would see this as conventional behavior. And yet she requests it, and Rabbi Yishmael chooses, based on his own dignity and respect for his parent, to refuse it. The nivalu chachamim badaver v'shalu Rabbi Yishmael v'tzivu lo sh'yanichena lasos ritzona. They actually commanded Rabbi Yishmael to allow this behavior to continue. Uvenyan zehu kibbutz. And the Yishalmi concludes that this is actually a warranted form of kibbutz. So Yishalmi may side with the Meiri. The kibbutz avraim applies even in the absence of any material conventional benefit. Whereas according to the Rashba, as I mentioned earlier, the Torah specifically does not employ the term Vihafta, rather employs the term Kaveh Sabicha V'yasimecha, to remind us that it is in the provision of responsibilities and assistance, not necessarily the reverential experience.
Question.
Yes?
It's fascinating. Why was the Rabbi telling him he needs to do it? Why is it different in these cases? Did it distinguish from mothers and tell your son, find me a husband?
Right. At least according to the Rambam, that parent was deranged. And at that point, after dementia sets in, then the responsibilities are somewhat absolved. That's at least the Rambam's
read.
The letter, correct. Evidently, that parent had experienced dementia on a broad scale, and therefore had exonerated the child from Kibbutz Avayim. Ravasi, I think it was. Ravasi or Rami. In this case, it was just a specific hang-up which had to be acceded to. Yes?
A little bit tongue-in-cheek, but for this division of matzah. In other words, the parent says to you, I want orange juice, or I want apple juice. Bring me the matzah that
right.
I want. If she says, I want
sure.
the hardest matzah
sure.
to eat. But I mean, you could certainly...
Sure. You can certainly argue the point.
Rashba as well.
Just as you could argue the point that coming here in a certain manner is also a provision of benefit, and essentially the entire structure collapses because everything can be traced to some form of psychological benefit.
Right, but I mean, I agree with that. I sort of held back from making that comment because,
right.
That, again, as you mentioned, destroys the structure, but here I think it sort of fits directly within the
right.
categories
being sure.
brought by the Rashba.
Sure, correct. Sure. Although the Rashba seemed to suggest such a category of non-provision of benefit. And a non-provision of benefit which would exonerate. I think that this, well, let me just describe a second machlokas, which I think in some ways cross-links with this machlokas. It's a fascinating discussion in the Gemara in Kiddushin, source number 5, to return to source number 5, about who should finance Kibbutz Avayim. Who should finance? The Gemara questions Ibailahu. Source number 5, paragraph 3. Mishel me. Who should bankroll the experience? Obviously, the child must deliver the food, deliver the clothing, provide the assistance, but on whose budget? Mishel me. So astoundingly, the Gemara provides two options. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishel Ben. Rabbi Nassan Barashi Omer Mishel Av. There is no question that the more obvious position here is the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Of course the child has to finance. Every single mitzvah incumbent upon an individual requires some financial outlay. I have to purchase a lulav, purchase matzah, purchase tefillin, and purchase the tools necessary to fulfill a mitzvah.
I had absolutely no money that I may be exonerated because I'm considered an ones, but under typical conditions there's a certain ceiling set on the types of expenditures. Mitzvah shlish, either mitzvah shlish, but basically I have responsibility to finance my own performance of mitzvahs. Stock certainly is a financial outlay. Why should Kibbutz Avayim be any different? Why should the Gemara present a position which suggests that a son has absolutely no fiscal responsibility, only delivery, assistance, and enabling?
And in fact, the Gemara ultimately rules like the second position. The second line of the third paragraph, Orele Rabbanan Rav Yirmiya, Amrele Lebreda Rav Yirmiya, the Rabbanan instructed Rav Yirmiya, or perhaps his son who asked the question, Kimandi Amma Mishela. In fact, there's absolutely no financial responsibility. If a child is impoverished, to a degree he's exonerated, he's excused from the mitzvah of Kibbutz Avayim. It's a startling position. If a mitzvah is incumbent directly upon a child, why should he be excused because of financial incapability? I believe that to a degree, this position reflects the issue I mentioned earlier. If the mitzvah is reverential, if the mitzvah is imperative upon a child to display respect and reverence, then there's no question that it should demand corresponding financial expenditure. Reasonable financial expenditure, parallel to matzah, parallel to tefillin. If, however, the mitzvah is defined not as reverence, but as provision of assistance, nourishment, clothing, then perhaps this position becomes more tenable. Certainly it's questionable, but it's much more tenable. I'm not commanded, at least in a normative sense, to revere. I'm commanded to provide, to assist, to support. It's feasible that that commandment is couched in a way which doesn't demand financial outlay, but merely assistance and enabling, at the cost of my parents. Again, it's still a shocking position. It's even more shocking that we accept it halachically. Of course, in the Achronim, there are many adjustments made to this position, that even if the child has no money, he may still have responsibilities similar to general tzedakah commitments. Why should I be any less responsible to deliver tzedakah to my father than I am to a stranger? But from the standpoint of keeping up my aim, I'm excusing the mitzvah. Because again, the Torah did not command us to revere, it commanded us to support and to assist.
Conversely, if you take that position, then you have to say that the obligation is a physical obligation.
Sure.
Could you be yotze the mitzvah to keep it on Achil Mashkenu or Malpisha by hiring a nurse, by hiring an assistant? Or you
can't. You're saying if it's just provision, then certainly a shliach would be viable. If it's reverence, then it may require personal engagement. I think so. Not sure if that's conversely, but I think I agree with the point. I'm not following the inversion. To further highlight the issue, I'd like to read a Rambam with you. The Gemara in Kiddushin, source number 10, describes Mechabdal b'chayav u'mechabdal b'melsav. A person is responsible to honor his parents while they are alive and while and after they have deceased. The Chayav Ketzah. And this brisa highlights what one may deem verbal reference. There is no provision of actual material benefit or service, but verbal acknowledgement. Ketzah. Hanishma b'davar aviv lamakom. Let's say a person arrives, I was just in Philadelphia, stranded for Shabbos, and I needed a place to stay. Presumably, if my parents were well known in Philadelphia, I would have been obligated to request lodging and food based on their merit and their reputation. Please help me, not because I'm Moshe Tarragon, but because of my parents. You know them so well, and you owe them a debt of gratitude. Hanishma b'davar avid lamakom. Lo yomar, he shouldn't request, shalchuni d'shvilatzmi, release me from prison or from confinement because of my own needs. Maruni d'shvilatzmi, assist me for my own needs. Patruni d'shvilatzmi, elakulo d'shvilava. My entire request, my entire solicitation should be centered around my parents. Bim also okay, so after a parent has died. Omer Dabra Shmua Mipiv, if I recite something in their name, Lo Yomer Kach Amar Abba, I shouldn't just recite it in a sort of naked sense, this is what my parents said. El Kach Amar Abba Mari, my father, my teacher, Harini Kaparas Mishkavo, my own experience should atone for his misdeeds. During the first year, Mikan Va'ilech, Omer Zechruni, Zechronu Lebracha Lechayolam Abba. Presumably, in this instance, there is no actual provision of benefits. How did my father benefit from the fact that I mention his name in a tight spot, or that I mention his name after he's passed away? So indeed, some Rishonim attempt to reconstitute this Gemara, so that there is some provision of benefit. For example, the Tosfos Riyaz Arkeim, which is a commentary on the margin of the Gemara in Kiddushin, mentions that by stating or requesting on behalf of myself and my father's reputation, I'm increasing and enhancing his reputation. I'm reminding people how important a person he was, how much gratitude they owe him. I'm essentially contributing to their reputation by requesting on their behalf. After a parent has died, by deflecting some of their punishment to myself or any kaparas mishkavo, I may be assisting them in other realms, Rashi suggests. So essentially, this brisa as well, this portrait, is consistent with a view of kibbutz avayim as the provision of actual benefit. But the Rambam's vision of this brisa is diametrically opposed and is unmistakable. Let's read the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim, Parak Vav. The final stage is the final part of this Rambam. L'chayiv l'chavdo b'shar d'rachav, source 11. B'shas v'asiyas masa u'matano, during your business dealings, v'asiyas kafatzav, k'esad. Hanishma b'tvar aviv l'makom, l'yoma maharuni b'shvil atzmi, patruni b'shvil atzmi, ela maharuni b'shvil abba, patruni b'shvil abba. V'chein kol tayotze baze. Here the Rambam summarizes. L'olam yichlol b'chlal d'varav. The Rambam describes this brisa in a behavioral sense. By mentioning my parents during their lifetime and after they have passed, I am providing absolutely no benefit, no deflection of punishment, no enhancement of reputation. This command is purely reflexive. I am conditioning myself, I am displaying a healthy sense of respect for them, and thereby typing or typecasting myself as an individual who honors a parent. Yichlol b'chlal devarav shehu choshesh b'chvod aviv v'shem yisyarim imenu. I present myself, I condition myself as a person who honors and reveres. I don't provide any benefits. So I believe that the Rambam really did see Kibbutz Av Va'Em in a manner which perhaps superseded the provision of benefit and is binding even in the absence of such provision. But I'm not sure that all Rishonim saw it that way. I think that this question, which we've sort of scrutinized along three different fronts. Front number one, just to remind us, whether it applies to capricious requests, the machlokas between the Meiri and the Rashba. Front number two, whether it must be financed by a child or can be delivered, it can be demanded financially of a parent. Issue number three, how to interpret this brisa. Is brisa somehow still providing some benefit to a parent, or is it merely behavioral? I think this question is a reflection in many ways of the duality of Kibbutz Av Va'Em. Why do we honor a parent? Why does the Torah impose such a heavy and heady responsibility upon us? It's a very famous Gemara in Kiddushin, which I didn't cite, where Chazal looked to Dama ben Nesina, a Gentile, as an exemplar of Kibbutz Av Va'Em. Very often Chazal do indeed look to Gentiles and sometimes to even the animal kingdom to demonstrate that a mitzvah is incumbent from a logical imperative, logical standpoint, even if it is not legislated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even a Gentile who may not have the mitzvah, or even animals who may not have any normative responsibilities, the Gemara says we can learn industry from the ants and modesty from the cats, and in this case the Gemara looks at Dama ben Nesina as a model of Kibbutz Av Va'Em. There's one opinion which suggests that Kibbutz Av Va'Em was already delivered at Mara prior to Har Sinai. There's a Girsa issue, whether Parah Aduma was delivered or Kibbutz Av Va'Em. Should it be read Pei Aleph or Kaf Aleph? It's a famous question. And certainly from an innate standpoint, we owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to our parents for having raised us, for having provided and nurtured us. And it's obvious that we should respond in kind. The Chinuch, as he describes the mitzvah, highlights this notion. Mishar Shei Mitzvah Zu. Sherai lo li adam shiyakir v'yigmol chesed l'misha asa imo tova. Source number four. To reciprocate chesed, v'shiyitin alibo ki'av v'aim heim sibas ha'yosav ha'olam, gratitude for having been created, gam yagu bo kama yagios b'katnisa, raising us, steering us, v'shiyit b'azos amin z'benasho, Yalam menu lahakir tova sakil barcho. And of course, it isn't just in a lesson or an exercise in hakaras hatovah and gratitude, but hakaras hatovah, as you know, the chavas halavavas ebeinu b'chaye, listed hakaras hatovah as the central trait from which all religion emanates. A person who has a healthy sense of gratitude, mentioned before Kafka, I think Stalin once said that gratitude is a sickness suffered by dogs. We understand that gratitude imposes a heavy weight to carry, but it's a recognition of our own fragility and our own vulnerability and the gratitude to others for having attended to our needs and assisted us. A person has to have shoulders broad enough to carry that load, to carry that burden. And I think the Chinuch is responding to this element or to this motive for Kibbutz Av Va'Em. There's a fascinating language which the Yishalmi employs, source number three, which actually institutionalizes this gratitude. Yishalmi says, Gadol Hudavar, in highlighting the need to perform Kibbutz Av Va'Em, perhaps prior to other mitzvot, Gadol Hudavar Shu Priyas Chov, Midavar, source number three, She'eno B'Priyas Chov. Yishalmi actually defines Kibbutz Av Va'Em as a debt, as a chov. Perhaps suggesting even legal connotations. The monies that have been invested in me, in us, the time, the effort, the resources, I have a debt. Of course, it can't be enforced legally, but it should resonate with that sense of responsibility. A person who has a healthy sense of honor and integrity doesn't just recompensate debts which are legally enforceable, but recognizes his responsibilities and attends to them. And this is a fiscal responsibility in the truest sense of the word, and it has to be recognized and shouldered. And I think that that's one angle which is intended by Kibbutz Avayim. Hakaras HaTov, gratitude, compensating, reciprocating for years and years of investment and effort. Yes?
So does that mean if you have a parent, just if you leave the family when a child, or maybe even, you know, no fault of the parents, a father dies during, while the mother is pregnant, in theory, according to this, there would be no PS hope.
Perhaps. I think that this element would fall. I agree.
They are still nailing the bread.
What?
They're still nailing the bread.
To the Bria, correct. But certainly a parent who perhaps had no intention to create a child, was engaged in not reproductive sexual activity, but exclusively personally satisfying sexual activity, so perhaps we could whittle away at this moral responsibility. However, the Gemara in Kiddushin speaks in very, very different terms. Source number one, Tana Rabbanan, Kavedes Avicha V'Yesimecha, V'Ne'amar Kavedes Hashem Mehomcha. Pasuk initially. The pasuk in Parshas Yisrael is structurally similar to the pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Yisrael describes the honor to parents. The pasuk in Mishlei, the honor to Atrishkar. Hishva hakasov kibur av va'ein l'chavor hamakom. Tari quake kibur av va'ein to cover Hashem. Hishva hakasov. A very, very powerful phrase. The Rambam tries to moderate this phrase and incite the Rambam. Shikiel HaKasev, which is a little bit less than equality, but one could suggest general similarity. Hishva HaKasev Kibbut Avvaim L'chvot HaMakom. The Gemara continues, V'chein B'din Sheshlosh Tam Shutatim Bo. It's only reasonable since all three are partners. Tan Rabban Sheshlosh Shutatim Heim Ba'adam HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Aviv V'Imo V'Zman Sh'Adam Mechabed Es Aviv V'Yas Imo Amra Kadosh Baruch Hu Ma'ala Ani Aleichem Kilu Darti B'Neam B'Chibduni. As if you have drawn the divine presence into your world by honoring parents. Bishalmi and Peah takes the Gemara Kiddushin one step further. Tani Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai Gadol Hi Kibbut Av Va'ein Shehadifo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoser Michvoda. Of course, halachically, we of course prioritize Kavod Hashem if a parent suggest disobedience of halacha, we need not listen, we shouldn't listen. But at least ideologically, existentially, Kibbutz Avayim is more significant. Shehadifu hakasav yotzer michvodo. And it employs roughly the same text, but in a slightly different alignment. These psukim don't merely speak of a debt of gratitude, of a moral responsibility. These psukim, which quite frankly almost deify a parent, are obviously spoken, and these drashos are cast in reverential terms. Now the Gemara I read before in Kiddushin suggests that the divine light reverence shown to a parent is based on his partnering with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Partnering in general in the creative process, anytime a person creates and produces rather than consumes, he's acting divine. We're all defined as consumers by our culture, but we're meant to be producers. Anytime we produce, we're acting in the divine image, similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creative capacity. And now we're more than when we bring children into this world, because we're not just creating in parallel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're creating in sync, we're creating together. We're partnering in the direct sense. So the Gemara in Kiddushin highlights the partnership. Line number two, source number one, V'chein B'din, Sheshloshtam Shitatim. But beyond the aspect of partnership, there's clearly an element which may mandate the type of reverence which the Gemara echoes, beyond just the partnering in the creative process. The parent is cast in an iconic mode, as an authority figure. And by respecting that authority figure, we build within ourselves a general capacity to submit to authority at all levels. As the conclusion of the Gemara Kiddushin suggests, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if you respect them, ma'ala ani aleihem kilu darki b'neihem, then you have conditioned yourself to respect authority in general, and you're more likely to embrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's authority. So the father is seen in an iconic sense. Every society is built upon the family unit as the basic structure of society. I mentioned Stalin before. I think the communists made a very courageous but futile attempt to sort of sidestep the family structure. And to a degree, I think this led to the erosion of that community. The community is built on the family unit as a mini community, to buttress society at large. But not just as an iconic figure of authority, but as the head and the leader of this family, this mini community, and in part, revering the leader of that family creates a healthier family setting and a more stable community by extension. Very fascinating Gemara in the end of Tshuvah, source number 14. The Gemara claims that honoring an older brother is a biblical command. Kaved et avicha b'ef imecha. Vav yisera, the last line of that Gemara. Lerabos es achicha hagadol. To honor an older brother, and according to some, even an older sister. It's a fascinating question, whether it's only an older brother or an older sister as well. Now, of course, the criteria and conditions of honoring an older brother are obviously different. And by and large, it's not something which we enforce or even expect or demand. But the very fact that the Gemara, based on this extra word in the pasuk, this extra vav, establishes this principle, is in my mind reflective of the father, not just as a creator, but as the head of a family who educates and raises children. And certainly in larger families, older children play an instrumental role in the stewarding and nurturing of younger children. It's what they call a ricochet effect, where the instruction delivered to older children pinballs throughout the family unit. An older brother certainly is not a creator and certainly may not demand the same moral debt. He's, after all, more or less a colleague. He's a peer. She is a peer. But in terms of establishing a firm family unit, a firm family structure, and by extension, establishing the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu within that structure, I think that the role of an older sibling is certainly aligned with my comments earlier. And perhaps even another Gemara, just before I answer your question, the Gemara questions if there's a clash between Kibbut Av and Kibbut Ein. Father requests water and mother requests water. Well, the wishes of the father should be prioritized. Because the mother is also obligated to serve the father's needs. Is this Gemara essentially evaluating Kibbut Av as more important than Kibbut Ein? And therefore, the request of the father must be attended to prior to the request of the mother? Or is this Gemara merely stating that inasmuch as Kibbut Av Ein is cast within the family setting, and within that family setting, a wife has halachic responsibilities within that setting to support the husband's domestic needs, so your kibbut has to be channeled to a father, because the definition of your kibbut is to reinforce the family experience. And the woman's role at this point, of course, again, from a normative standpoint, we don't enforce this. We encourage husbands not to make excessive demands from their wives, and certainly not to place children in a bind, but certainly the spirit of the halacha may be suggestive of Kibbut Av Ein as a reflection of the family hierarchy, so to speak, not in an abusive manner, but the overall family structure which halacha suggests. So these are two very, very different portraits of Kibbut Av Ein. And I believe that those two portraits are parallel to the two sketches which I drew earlier. If Kibbut Av Ein is a moral debt, then presumably it must only be delivered as a service and as a provision. My parents raised me, and I have a responsibility to reciprocate to deliver goods and services as a show of my gratitude. But the moment that the experience becomes reverential, and a parent becomes iconic, and the respect I show a parent is likened to the respect I show a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the respect towards a parent is even more significant than the respect to Kodesh Baruch Hu, then presumably that experience supersedes assistance and provision, goods and services. I have to engage in a loving, adoring, revering relationship with my parents as an authority figure, as the head of my family, and ultimately as a gateway towards greater acceptance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's authority.
would a nafkamina have seen those two models be in the case of truly abusive parents?
I'll mention that in a moment. We're not going to talk about an abusive parent, but a slightly different nafkamina. Abusive parents, again, it's difficult because even if there is an abuse involved, there may be other provisions of authority and family integrity that may in some ways overwhelm the element of abuse. I think the issue will be more correctly raised, what if a parent is completely delinquent in leading the family structure and providing an authority figure?
What if someone shows up in front of Rabbanan and says, look, my father is, he gives a whole litany of history that can be validated,
right,
of abuse, straight abuse. Does that mean?
I'll tell you what. Let me first mention the experience of a father who's in Russia, and then we'll use that as a springboard to your question. I mentioned three halachic issues before. I want to mention a fourth, which I believe may stem from this equation. The Mishnah in Yevamos describes the types of parents and the types of children by extension, which may or may not excuse Yibum. What types of children excuse a woman from the responsibilities of Yibum if her husband has deceased? So the Mishnah says, Mishiyesh lo ben, source number 12, Mikol makom, poter eishes aviv min hayibum. Person has any type of child, no matter whether the child is a pedigree child or a bastard child, then when he passes, his wife is excused from Yibum. V'chayev al makaso v'al kilaso, and that child is obligated and is responsible if he injures a parent or he curses a parent, he receives the death penalty, this week's parsha, even if he's not a pedigree child. Even if the child is the progeny of interfaith sexual activity or sexual activity with a maidservant, that child is responsible to honor a parent. The Gemara says, Amai. Karikan benasi biyamcha lasaur. This father has violated halacha by engaging in illicit sexual activity. Why must the child honor him? So Gemara says, "Ki da'amar Pinchas mishmeid rapapa." The Gemara refers to a father who is penitent, who has atoned for his past misdeeds, who indeed engaged in illicit sexual activity and produced the child, but has since reformed, has since performed tshuva. The simple reading of the Gemara, and indeed the manner in which the Torah takes this Gemara, is that a father who is classically defined as a Rasha is in no way the subject of Kibbutz Avayim. The only father who can demand Kibbutz Avayim from a child is a father who has performed tshuva and has restored his status as a Yisrael Kasher of the Tzaddik. The Rambam disagreed. The Rambam writes in source number 13, Hilchos Mamre in Perek Vav, Hamamzer chayiv b'chvod aviv umaro. Af apishu pater al makaso v'kilalaso atchiyasachuva. The Rambam interprets the Gemara Yevamos that the exemption to a father who is a Rasha only applies to the very stringent isurim of injuring and cursing. A child who injures and curses will be put to death only if his father is inside. But the general texture of Kibbutz Avayim applies even to a father who is a Rasha and unrepentant. The Rambam again writes, "Hamamzer chayav b'chvod aviv umaro af al pi shehu pater al makaso v'kilalas atchiyas tshuva." Afilu the Rambam reiterates, "Hayaviv Rasha ubal averos mechabdo umisyare mimenu." You must still revere and fear that parent. I believe that this machlokus as well between the Rambam and the Tor may in some ways reflect our original question, though with a slight irony in the Rambam, which I won't reconcile, but I'll just alert you to. If Kibbutz Avayim is driven by a moral debt, then it in no way should be impacted by religious behavior or religious rectitude. If a parent raised me appropriately, then independent of their religious choices and their halachic behavior, I am obligated to reciprocate that moral responsibility. In that instance, I would see the Rambam's position as more likely. But if the father is revered as a stand-in, so to speak, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as an icon or a porthole to revering HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a source of moral instruction, to build a family unit in the shape of halacha, to bolster society, to reinforcing that unit, then one can seriously question whether parents who have so sharply deviated from halachic behavior to the degree that he's referred to as a rasha would be worthy of receiving that kavod. The irony, of course, lies in trying to reconcile the Rambam, source number 13, with the Rambam in source number 11. As the Rambam in source number 11 described a reverential experience of attempting to not just provide services, but to revere in word and in deed, to condition myself as a person. Remember the Rambam in the end of source 11, Liyolam yichlo b'chlal devarash yuchoshesh b'chvod aviv v'shem isyarim yimenu. So from the Rambam in source number 11, it would appear that indeed the Rambam sees it as a reverential experience, not beyond just the provision of goods and services. Whereas in this Rambam, who extends Kibbut Avayim even to a father who is in Russia, would be more reflective of some type of moral debt, which is being repaid, and a moral debt perhaps would not apply to non-material benefits. So I'm not so sure that my position can be fully reconciled within the Rambam. But certainly, from a theoretical standpoint, I believe that this machlokas between the Rambam and the Torah is in line with our patterning of the halacha. So to summarize, if they both apply, and there's an element of debt involved, there are two layers according to the Rambam, and therefore in Hilchos Mamrim you have to gauge in reverence. And moms or father exempts the child from reverence but still demands a moral responsibility. That would be a reconciliation. There really is a bilayered or bifurcated system according to the Rambam. And ideally the system requires reverence, and therefore the verbal show of respect and adjuration. But a mamzer, a father who's a rasha, no longer demands the reverence, but still, so to speak, is worthy of a moral recompensation. Okay, I think that would be a solution to the Rambam. I'll get to your question in a moment. I mentioned before the pseudo-divine image of a father. If you take a look at source number 5, the source which I omitted before, with the Yosef, ki havashama kol kare di'ime. What's fascinating is that Yosef was blind, although I don't know how early he was blinded. But Yosef was blind. So somehow his mother's presence exuded even greater force, an even greater religious experience. If Yosef, ki havashama kol kare di'ime, as he heard his mother approaching, amar eitu mikame shechina dasya. I will rise, not because my mother approaches, because the shechina approaches. So the Rabbi Yosef experienced this divine-like presence through a parent. He was even willing to describe it as the Shechina, which I think is perhaps the most provocative and extreme formulation of this association between parents and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in terms of your question, an abusive parent, I'm not so sure that'd be different than a delinquent parent who just doesn't abuse, but so to speak, alights. I think in terms of reciprocating a moral debt, there's obviously no responsibility. Question is, to what extent can I maintain an iconic sense of authority figure despite the lack of commitment to that role and function? In the case of the Rambam's mamzer, there was a repudiation of any moral identity. By abjectly disobeying halacha in such a severe and ostentatious manner, I think that he's repudiated any moral association. In the case of an abusive parent, again, an abusive parent itself violates halacha, but let's say a delinquent parent who hasn't violated. An abusive parent would be a mamzer, it would be someone who's considered a rasha. It's only physical abuse, and maybe even extreme verbal or psychological abuse. But if a parent is merely delinquent, depending upon how we define delinquency, but I'm not so sure that they would withdraw from that moral position, and from their ability to serve as an icon, at least as a stage in building a healthy acceptance of authority. That would be the way that I would tackle that issue. Okay, just to sort of summarize, I tried to sketch from a halachic standpoint a patterning of different positions to how to define Kibbut Avayim. Briskers like to pattern. Briskers like to take seemingly dislocated and disassociated data and link them logically and try to see them as coherent and connected by a common unifying thread of logic. So there are 5 or 6 instances which we inspected halachically, but we tried at some level to somehow unify them into different modes of Kibbutz Avayim. Following three questions presented themselves. Well, actually, we'll summarize them in terms of four questions. Question number one. Is Kibbutz Avayim defined in terms of provision of goods and services, or respecting and revering and abiding by wishes, even if they seem capricious? The Meiri felt that those wishes must be adhered to, unless the fathers overstepped halachic authority by requesting halachic disobedience. The Rashba claimed that only material provision of benefits, and these are questions which are hotly debated in Rishonim, the very famous Tshuva of Amharik, which a father demands the marriage of his daughter to a certain person. And at some point, the Maharik of Yosef Cologne, one of the great Rishonim, Italian Rishonim, Italian, one of the great Rishonim, at first suggests that you need not listen because the fathers effectively requested halachic non-compliance because by marrying a woman you don't love, you'll violate various usurim, and therefore he's essentially ordering you to violate halacha, which sort of escapes or evades the question. And then he finally claims that a child need not listen to a parent because it isn't a parent's right to demand marriage, to demand choices of living, to demand places of study. Something which I know as a child and now a parent obviously lies at the heart of our attempts to build our own lives and our own identity while still exuding and displaying a healthy respect for the wishes of our parents. Second issue which we explored is whether the experience must be financed by the child, which presumably would be the logical, the intuitive approach. Or according to one position in the Gemara, which is actually adopted as the halachic ruling, it needn't be financed by the child. It should be financed solely by the parent. That's also suggestive of an experience which is not incumbent upon me as an individual, but rather just a sort of a debt which the Torah demands of me. And this debt is not physical, it's merely personal, to assist and to facilitate the provision. And finally, the question of how to read that brisa, and finally, the third issue, how to read that brisa in Kiddushin, whether the respect I show verbally is in some way the provision of benefit by enhancing the reputation, by deflecting punishment from my father, my mother to myself, by enhancing my parents' standing in the community, or as the Rambam clearly demonstrates, it's a reflexive responsibility to train myself to be someone who is seen and who speaks in a manner that displays reverence to parents. The final issue is on the locus between the Rambam and the Torah, based on the Gemara in Yevamos Chaf Beis, as to whether respect should be delivered to a parent who has grossly violated halacha to the degree that they're defined as a Rosh. And again, I repeat, grossly violated halacha. Not only a parent who holds by the air or doesn't hold by the air, but a parent who has deeply deviated from the halachic norm. And I believe that these halachic issues are, in some ways, glints or reflections of two different and perhaps coexistent motives for Kibbutz Avayim. There's the, so to speak, generic motive of compensating a debt, a motive which is intuitive and isn't necessarily something which has to be legislated. Then there's a sense that a Kodesh Baruch Hu establishes a parent, it's an iconic figure, partnering with a Kodesh Baruch Hu in creating and raising children, and ultimately a figure which assists us in establishing a healthy acceptance of authority without stifling our own initiative and our own identity. That second position should perhaps require not just provision but reverence. I want to, so to speak, conclude by reminding ourselves that even if we don't feel that reverence is halachically demanded, it's certainly something which morally and existentially enhances our religious experience and improves our moral character. My attempts were merely to demonstrate, first of all, the halachic nuances of this mitzvah, and second of all, to provide perhaps at least a more somber but realistic manner in which to perform the mitzvah. Rav Lichtenstein always told us that the mitzvah v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha does not require us to love a Jew. And he proved it to us through various halachos in the Rambam. It requires us to attend to a Jew's needs, to provide for their welfare, to protect their interests, to protect their reputation, not to slander. But at least according to most Yishonim, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha does not demand existential, passionate love of the other. When it comes to loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem employs the term v'ahavta es Hashem l'kach. Hashem himself is the subject of our love, of our passion, of our desire. When it comes to a friend, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, and that lamed, a different preposition, connotes not the existential engagement at the level of emotion, but rather the delivery of preservation of interests and services and assistance. Does that mean that existential love of another Jew is not a desirable goal? Of course it is. It will hasten Mashiach. But as you know, we can't always love every other Jew in our community. But it doesn't exclude us or excuse us from assisting and attending to their needs. So sometimes a more sober reading of a mitzvah, a less grandiose and a less superlative definition, allows the mitzvah to be more operative and more meaningful and more attainable. So I think the same has to be said about Kibbutz Eva'im. Certainly think we have to strive as best we can, each within the limits of our own context, to revere and to adore and to provide that sense of reverence. But even in the absence of our ability to fully excel at that level, certainly provision of assistance, I mean, I have this conversation on a daily basis with boys in our yeshiva. Kibbutz Eva'im does not demand that you mimic your parents' behavior or accept their wishes for your lifestyle. But when debating that issue, you have to speak in a respectful manner. And perhaps during the years that you're sharing your house and your services with them before you're married, you may have to make certain concessions to their will, because you're still receiving, you're still a member of their community. So I think it's important not to play endgame and adopt the go-for-broke mentality where Kibbutz Eva'im is defined in such elusive and glorious terms that it slithers beyond our attainment, that it, so to speak, becomes so surpassing that it's impossible to perform.
Sorry. It has occurred to me that in the modern world, the world in which we live, because of the changes in society, longevity and economic differences and things like that, that maybe the reason that we get the focus on so many esoteric issues is because the actual basic mitzvah, mashkil, doesn't really apply as it might have applied in our older generations until a very later stage in life. Really
and even then, we delegate it to the providers.
You cannot delegate it, but when you're 25 years old, in general, most people in our society don't have any opportunity or need to take care of their parents in a physical way. So the whole debate shifts a little bit more to the
I think so. I think there's a highlighting of certain nuances rather than appreciation of the overall system. I think so. And it creates a lot of pressure, and how we handle the pressure is not always a simple task. Yes. Correct. Despite, he says kabed es, but it employs the term kabed, not vihavta. But correct, the text itself may not connote reverence, but the context and the parallel to the pasuk initially, kabed es Hashem mehoncha, does evoke that sense of divine-like reverence. Correct. Absolutely. Anyway, thank you very much. Have a great day, everyone. Mazel tov to the Stahl family. We should all be back.